Welcome to the Cosmic Cafe, the companion podcast to thecosmiccircus.com. I'm Brian Kitson, and we have an exciting interview today. I sat down with Monique Asher, whose debut novel, Don't Eat the Pie, comes out this October. In this interview, Asher discusses where her passions for writing began, some of her spooky inspiration for her novel, other upcoming projects in the pipeline, and her horror podcast, Stay the Night, which she hosts with her sister. Thank you so much for listening. Enjoy! Thank you so much for joining me today. I am so excited to talk about Don't Eat the Pie. I had the privilege of reading it back in March, and it is a fantastic horror book, especially for your first time out. You know, I've heard of the horrors of trying to write a book and stuff like that, and this was absolutely fantastic. I ate it up on a vacation. I was sitting beachside and just enjoyed it.
That's like the perfect setting for it.
Absolutely. In Florida, just sitting there reading it, and they're like, do you want to go swimming? And I was like, no, I got to finish this book. I got to find out what's going on. But what has this journey into writing been like for you? Like, how did you get started?
So it's a long story. It's a long story. So if we're okay with getting into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I started writing when I was a kid. Like, thankfully I had cool teachers along the way that were always encouraging writing and being creative and all that jazz. But basically, I mean, as young as elementary school, if I got an assignment where I could turn it into a short movie or a creative story, that's what I was choosing to do. I was super into horror real young. So watching like all the Scream movies, I Know What You Did Last Summer. And I got it in my head that I wanted to be a screenwriter when I grew up.
Okay.
Yes. And so this is a story that I have not yet told, and it's a bullying story. So when I was in fifth grade, which my oldest is in right now, and my God, fifth graders in this day and age,
They're rough.
Jobs just showing up, I think. Yeah. It's wild out there. So I was working together with a friend who also was like interested in it, in writing a screenplay. And we would share this notebook back and forth. And eventually she got busy with stuff that like normal 11 to 12 year olds get busy with, like friends, shopping, makeup, that kind of thing. Excellent. And I was not that kid. So I ended up finishing the screenplay by myself, and my teachers noticed. So at the end of the year, like, they gave me the fifth grade award for being the most likely to actually write a screenplay and be a director when I get older. And this,
that's so awesome.
Thank you. It was a big achievement for me as a little fifth grader. But this other friend I was working with did not like that. They wanted that identity. They did not like I was acknowledged for it. And it led to like a big split off in a friend group. And so it took me until going to therapy in my 20s to realize that like this might have been the thing that was holding me back from pursuing a career in writing. And it's so wild, right, to think about how a small bullying incident as like a kid, a middle schooler, a high schooler could potentially affect the rest of your life. But that was my experience. Once I got some therapy around it, it freed up my ability and confidence, I think, to pursue writing. And I wanted to share that story because I feel like it's really relevant to the actual book I wrote, which is that the small or big traumas that happen to us as little people can drastically affect the way that we behave, our choices, our relationships to the rest of our lives. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you overcame that because it is, I mean, we definitely need stories like this. And it does have a lot of, you know, reading it as a therapist as well, I was just like, oh, there is a lot of trauma in here, but it's about healing from trauma or like how people have healed from trauma. And sometimes it's not always the easiest way, or it's not, you know, it's not always looks the same. So can you give us a little synopsis of Don't Eat the Pie, kind of from your author perspective of having written it? What is the story to you?
Okay, so Don't Eat the Pie is really, truly, it's a mother-daughter story. It's written from two perspectives. It was really important to me that we got a teenage perspective, too, of like a teenager who's grown up a little bit too quick a mom mm-hmm. who's a little bit stunted emotionally. And they are thrown into this new life with this new family because mom gets married to Ben, this very handsome and high class dude. I think of like, Emma and Sam are the main characters. They're really from a working class family. Single mm-hmm. mom has struggled with stuff her whole life. And this is kind of like the fairy tale, but where Prince mm-hmm. Charming comes along. But we find out very quickly that the castle that he takes her back to, aka Camellia Island, is not, it's not a fairy tale. Maybe a Grimm's fairy tale, mm-hmm. right? So
there's definitely fairy tale aspects of it.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I was going for that a little bit. So on this island, they start to notice stuff's off. Weird, creepy stuff starts happening. We've got a ghost next door that's trying to communicate with our main characters, send them a message, but of course their own trauma kind of gets in their way. Mm-hmm. And they end up kind of fighting the clock, as we know that like they've got a certain amount of time almost to get off of this island to figure it out before things can go very awry. I wrote this book because I love fun horror that doesn't take mm-hmm. itself too seriously, while also exploring like pretty serious subject matter. And so I think it's got those vibes of like, if you love a Rosemary's Baby, Stepford Wives, Ready or Not kind of film, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. it's probably going to be a fun ride.
When I was reading it, I got the vibes of like a horror version of almost like Gilmore Girls. Cause like you have those dynamics of just like a dysfunctional, you're like trying to raise a daughter and you're like, you know, you've had yourself have all this trauma. Right. And that's one of my favorite shows, so that I hope that's a huge compliment to you, because it is so well written, but it has that horror aspect of just what happens when everything starts to go wrong, you know. And
yeah it totally is question. That you're the second person who said that it's like gives Gilmore Girls but horror.
I mean, if you're going to be compared to anything, be compared to Gilmore Girls.
Fair.
But it's interesting because this, you know, you don't quite know what's going on. Is it supernatural? Is it the trauma? Is it a ghost? Are people imagining it? Is it all in your head? And so it was kind of, you know, there's also like that murder mystery aspect to it too. There was like a lot of different aspects that came together and it worked really well. And so it was awesome to read that.
Yeah.
How did the idea for this novel come to you?
So I was querying my first book. So this is the second book I've written, but I was querying it. I didn't widely submit it. I sent out about maybe like 20 queries total. And, I was feeling a little discouraged. So I went out in my garden. I like to garden quite a bit. I went out in my garden and I can remember like exactly where I was walking. I stopped and I was like, what if there's a book called Don't Eat the Pie? And what if this is the final scene that happens? And so I got this final scene, or I guess it would be like the last five chapters now, thinking about how it actually turned out as a book, just downloaded to my brain. And I was like, okay, I have to figure out a way to get there. So let's sit down and start writing this book. Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome. So the title did not change. You kind of knew right from the beginning what it was going to be called.
Yeah, which is weird because I'm not great with titles. So,
as I say, those tend to be the things that change the most, you know, as you're kind of going along.
Yeah. And I had a couple friends that were like, really? That's the title? I don't like it. I don't like anything about it. And I was like, my gut tells me this is right. It's good. So
it's very apropos for the book. And once people read it, they'll understand because it makes perfect sense. And maybe from the outside perspective, you're just like, what does this mean? Because I was thinking in my head, like, is it going to be like a poisoning book or like a Black Widow type of book? But like, you don't know until you get in there. And it's so much more than that.
Oh, thanks.
But with this, you know, we kind of talked about those interesting mother-daughter dynamics. How did those form in the writing process for you? Did it change over time? Have this strong idea that there was going to be this family trauma, these dynamics, or did that change?
Things about both characters did change throughout like the developmental editing process, but I feel like it was more, you know, there is that thing that happens, at least for me as a writer, where my intention doesn't always come out on the page the first try. And so getting reader feedback to make sure that I really drove home who they were to the reader, not knowing all the same backstory that I do.
Sure.
Right. They came out different on the page, but Emma and Sam were really, they've always been Emma and Sam. When I sat down to write the book, I wanted to write, they're both a part of me. So I've been the kid who grew up too fast and was dealing with stuff too early. And I've also been a parent who had to go back and deal with their own skeletons in their closet in order to overcome them and be the kind of parent that I wanted to be. So I felt like writing this was very cathartic for both parts of myself and would be relatable because I know a lot of people have gone through the same things that I have or similar. So.
Absolutely. It's a very universal story, you know, and as a therapist, I'm sure we both can understand that these traumas, when you kind of boil them down, they are, we tend to see patterns and that's why we can predict human behavior.
It's true.
Did Sam or Emma, did one of them have a stronger voice when you started than the other one, or were they both kind of as strong as each other?
You know, I feel like through revisions, I added more of Sam that initially it was more Emma. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think that's because, like you said, that you part of being a parent is learning to go back and heal. So it sounds like you had to learn a little bit more about yourself as you did that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I feel like each of my books, I learned something for real. My characters are, they're always teaching me. Yeah.
It's a good life lesson to be able to have them teach you back.
Yeah. I mean, Sam, people have still commented that they can't totally get on board with her, Sam the mom. That like they identify more with Emma, but I really like how kind of broken Sam is. She was, I guess she was significantly more unlikable the first time around. Yeah.
Okay.
Like traditionally unlikable. She's always been my jam, but not everyone else's.
I think that what she's going through in this book without, I'm not going to spoil it or anything, but
yeah,
you, as a person, I was reading and I was like, ooh, that's really a tough pill to swallow. But as the therapist, I was just like, I can understand where you're coming from. So that's why, like, I think that kind of background helped to humanize her a little bit more, you know?
Yeah.
And also there's supernatural stuff going on. So like,
yeah,
it's not all in her control.
Right. People act weird. So
100%. Was there anything about the process of writing this novel that surprised you?
Something I heard a long time ago and I found to be really true with this novel was that most of the time when you get feedback from other people, they're going to be able to identify what the problem is, but their solution for it is almost always going to be wrong. I found that to be almost 100% true with this book. So there were so many people involved, you know, from beta readers to my critique partners to my editors and proofreaders and a couple of agents that I worked with too. So everybody had different opinions about things. And when I noticed that, like, they started identifying the same issues, but everyone had like a different way of fixing it, and I fixed it in a completely different way than what they thought.
Sure.
I guess the thing that I learned from it is that feedback is extremely important. You cannot write a book in a closed room. It won't work. And it won't be, I don't want to be like blanket statement, but most of the time it's not going to be good because you can't see all of your own weaknesses, and you can't ever go back and truly read it like a reader. Like, you just can't. So I learned that lesson, that I really need to listen to my own voice about how to solve issues, but listen to others that there is an issue. It also really, like, people who've read the art copy now that originally CP'd for me or originally beta'd for me have commented, I don't know how you added even more to it. I don't know how you came up with like this new scene or replaced this, because somehow it works better, but I thought it was like good how it was. So it really forced me to stretch creatively and come up with things that I just assumed, like, once you wrote the book and it was edited, like, that was it.
That was that. Yeah.
But really, you can keep adding stuff forever.
I mean, so you're saying we're going to get a 10-year anniversary copy with all new stuff to it.
It's a completely different book.
Yeah. That's interesting. I never thought of writing a book like that, but it makes sense that it takes, you know, it takes a village to raise a child in a way.
And
you need everybody's opinion, and not opinion, but you need their thoughts so that you can change it up to how you want it to be.
Right. Yeah.
Do you think that your, you know, your time as a therapist, do you think that this has influenced how you've developed that? Because, you know, how you've developed the book or like the storylines, you know, not necessarily with the work that you've done with your clients, but like your knowledge and how to heal trauma or how to look at people differently.
I think yes. And how to look at people differently and see, you know, I don't know if it's like being a therapist or just the way that my brain works and has kind of always worked is like, when I see something happen or I see a person behaving a certain way, I make up a story in my own mind about why it's happening. So definitely like being a therapist and having the actual clinical knowledge, I think backs mm-hmm. it up a lot, you know, like, and then just experience, right? Seeing behavioral patterns over and over and over again in people is so mm-hmm. interesting. And that like, man, if we could all just cognitively acknowledge that like something happened to us and we need to change this thing or we mm-hmm. want to change this thing and have our behavior mm-hmm. goal, it would be so great. But that's not how it is. We almost always act in the opposite way that would be helpful, even though sure. we like consciously know what we should do. Right. So I think that definitely plays into this. In the second book that will be published, which comes out the end of next summer, there is a lot more knowledge, my therapy knowledge base and working with dissociative disorders Ooh. That comes into play. So I want to like be very clear that like I would never use anything from a client's story,
yes,
anything
100%.
In my work. It's super unethical. And I get that question and I'm like, who do you think I am? But the year before I started writing The Red Knot, which is the book that comes out next year, I did a bunch of intensives, which I have access to because I'm a therapist.
Sure.
And if I don't intend to work with the disorders on dissociative identity disorder and dissociative disorders in general, because I felt like I wanted to write a story about a woman with DID that was going to be the most clinically accurate and humanly empathetic ever. Because I see a lot of, I'm like totally going off on a tangent about the second book, but
no, I love it.
Look, it means a lot to me. And I think it does incorporate a lot of that stuff. But one of the tropes that I see happening in all kinds of media surrounding DID in particular, multiple personalities, is that they're dangerous. Like yes. you think of Split. Mm-hmm. Of that, God, I can't remember what it was, Vacancy, where, mm-hmm. yeah. And that I just find them to be kind of inaccurate to reality. So
sure.
I intentionally took those trainings not to really work with clients mm-hmm. on it, but just because like I get the inside scoop and I can use it in my books. Yeah.
I do love that we, you know, there's things that we can learn as therapists that maybe people don't have access to and that we can use those in our work. I got to speak a little bit on DID with Moon Knight and how it was one of the best versions that we've had so far of DID.
Yeah.
So yeah, and getting to have that knowledge was kind of cool, you know.
That's cool.
So this novel takes place on the mysterious Camilla Island. Mm-hmm. Where did you kind of draw inspiration for this island from? Is there somewhere specific that you visited or, you know, or like where, you know, we have a lot of beautiful islands and stuff around Michigan. Do you feel like you pulled from there a little bit? What was inspiring for this island?
I love the Outer Banks. It's one of my favorite places to vacation to. And when I wrote this book, I knew I wasn't going to be able to visit that year. And so I was like, what if I just like visit it in my brain?
I love that.
Hours doing this. But I love visiting that part of the country, like North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia. It's the smells, the humidity, the heat, the vegetation, the critters all over the place. I love it. So I definitely drew inspiration from my own visits there and some of the moments that I had there for sure.
That's awesome. I've not been to the Outer Banks, but I just recently went to New Orleans. And so I was kind of pulling some of that feel for there. Cause I was like, oh, like, you know, there's, you know, the stifling heat of some of the days and stuff like that. But you also have a spooky podcast that I was hoping that maybe we could talk about real quick.
Oh, absolutely.
You do that with your sister, correct?
Yeah, you know her. She's the coolest person that ever lived.
Yeah. Katrina. I mean, you both are. I've known you guys for over a decade of my life.
Thanks.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about, like, what's the name of your podcast? What do you do on it? And how much fun you're having?
Yeah. So our podcast is called Stay the Night. And it is where we talk about places where you can actually go and visit and stay overnight in a haunted or paranormal or suspected paranormal venue. So whether that's, like, we've talked about campgrounds before, national parks, more recently I think we did the Mammoth Caves, but also like hotels, and then some sites that are just open for paranormal investigation too. So we explore those. Originally when we came up with the idea, we were hoping it would come off as like spookier, and then very quickly realized that we are too funny. What I mean,
we gotta have humor with the horror, right?
Yeah. So, I would say it's like more of like a banter, back and forth comedy podcast. And we're definitely not like making fun of the places that we go to. And there's spooky elements to it. We've only added. We have one episode where we actually used our evidence, like EVPs and stuff like that, to like share with everyone publicly. But yeah, so we do that. We've been on a lot of spooky trips since we stopped recording for a while. We've been on a little hiatus. It was a rough year for us just personally. Like, we lost my dad last year. My sister started a teaching program that was like really requiring a lot of her time. And I've been dealing with some chronic illness issues, but more recently this spring, we've kind of gotten our stuff back together. Yeah. And maybe we're recording this Friday. And by maybe, I mean, yes, we're back to recording and we should be uploading episodes soon. Yeah.
Good. I've missed it. You guys, it's one of the funniest podcasts I listen to.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Everyone, we've gotten a lot of support and messages like, where the hell are you? When are you coming back? How am I supposed to continue my life without you? And
people become dependent on it, you know?
I appreciate it. Because, boy, it's an ego boost. But also, it's like, I appreciate the outward pressure to get back to it because we love doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you wear a lot of hats and, you know, author and, you know, podcaster on top of being a mom and wife and all and, you know, therapist. So it's understandable sometimes some of those fall to the wayside just a little bit.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you have another book coming out next year. But I know that you are you never stop writing.
No.
Can we expect regular books from you coming out in the next couple of years? Is there anything you can tell us about them? I know you talked about the next one.
I've got some stuff in the works. So the first book that I ever wrote, I don't know if it will come out with this name or not, but it was called Blood and Bourbon. And it's, I guess, the only book I've written just from one point of view. So it's a little different. But it takes place in Michigan, which is nice, right? Like, have a home state book. And then the book that I just recently finished this fall is mildly inspired by like Mackinac Island and Fayette Ghost Town in the UP. So it is another Michigan book, and it's got Shining vibes. It also has some like Night Circus vibes. So it's kind of leaning, it's horror, also leaning into some like dark fantasy too. Yeah.
I love that. I'm so excited. And I guess just one more question for fun. What are some of your favorite horror novels, or what are some current horror reads that you're obsessed with?
Okay, so I won't shut up talking about Laurel Hightower's newest book, The Day of the Door. It is so good.
Okay.
This is my first book I've read by her, but she's quite prolific. She's got a lot of work out there. It scratched all my itches for like a found footage type of feel to it. Oh. Paranormal stuff and like really intense family dynamic issues like you would see in The Haunting of Hill House Show by Mike Flanagan.
Okay.
Her writing style works really well for me. I don't know what, there's certain authors like her, Josh Malerman is one of my favorite authors, autobi for forever. Mm. His style of writing just downloads so easily to my brain. And Laurel's is like that too. So that's my most recent read that I would definitely recommend. It was awesome. Gemma Amore had The Folly come out last year that I really, really liked. It was a new and like very unique take on a possession book. Mm-hmm. And the setting is just like so beautiful. It's like isolated castle.
Oh, I love that.
But she's great. She's a UK writer. She blurbed The Pie for me, which was so sweet. If you are into extreme horror, Emma E. Murray's book that's coming out in July, I think July, okay, over the summer, is insane. It's like, I had no idea that she was so talented to make some of the most disgusting and horrible things just unputdownable and like enjoyable. Yeah. So her book Crushing Snails comes out this year, and I was lucky enough to get an advanced reader copy. That was just phenomenal. I have a lot of really talented friends with books coming out soon, and I can't talk about all of them yet, but it's going to be like this year, I feel like, was amazing for horror. Next year is going to be amazing for horror. It's so cool.
Yeah. We got a good few years to look forward to.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for talking about your book, Don't Eat the Pie. Just let people know where they can, when it's coming out, when they can pick it, where they can pick it up at. And just how excited you are to finally have your book in other people's hands.
Yes, I am so excited. Everything about like having a book go from like idea to this takes so long and it's full of so many secrets. So it's great that they're like all pretty much out there now. Mm-hmm. So Don't Eat the Pie is going to be hopefully in lots of stores, definitely around Michigan. So if you want to go into your local indie and order it, they will order it for you. But if you prefer to find it and just pre-order it online, it's at Barnes & Noble, it's at Target, it's at Amazon, it's at...
it's everywhere.
Yeah, it really is everywhere, which is amazing. Thank you to my publisher for doing that. So it will be all over the place. If you want to follow me or the podcast that we were talking about on Instagram, I'm at Mo Asher Writes. That Mo Asher Writes pretty much everywhere, and yes, you'll be able to find all of my stuff there. I've got a nice link tree, so yeah,
perfect.
Yeah,
thank you so much, Mo. We appreciate
thank you for having
me on. We're gonna have you on for every book, so I'm excited.
Yes,
thank you so much, listeners. We are so excited to share this book with you, and we'll talk to you later.
All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Cosmic Cafe. You can find the companion article for this podcast, along with all the other news for those who like superheroes, science fiction and fantasy films, TV shows, and other media at thecosmiccircus.com. Have a great day!